You're listening to the Restless Wanderer podcast by Paul Coulter, and this is part 3 of a series in 1st and 2nd Kings. 1 Kings, chapter 2, verse 1. When David's time to die drew near, he commanded Solomon his son, saying, I am about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways, and keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, that the Lord may establish his word that he spoke concerning me, saying, if your son pays close attention to their way, to walk before me in faithfulness with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. We'll pause there after verse 4 of 1 Kings 2. In the last episode, we saw how Adonijah, the second and oldest remaining son of King David, tried to set himself up as king, and how Nathan the prophet and Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, worked together to make sure that David followed through on what seems to have been an earlier promise that Solomon would be his son. How David then took action and Solomon was anointed by a priest, Nathan, and a prophet, Zadok, and a prophet, Nathan. Solomon was established, Adonijah fled for refuge to the altar in the tabernacle, and Solomon allowed him to come down under a kind of suspended sentence, saying that he would not kill him if he proved himself worthy. Now David is about to die, and we don't know what amount of time passed between Solomon's coronation or anointing and David dying, but these are David's last words to his son. And it's very significant that David says to him that the primary duty of Solomon is to be faithful to the law of Moses. It's very important to realise that kings in Israel were not absolute monarchs in the way that many ancient kings were. In fact, many kings right up into the Middle Ages and early modern period had absolute power. Their will was the law. But the kings of Israel were to be subject to the law of God. In many ways, their role was to set an example to the people of obedience to the law of God and to create justice according to the law of God, to make ruling injustice and make sure that the judges in the land would be administering justice according to the law of God, to create an environment where people could be taught and be obedient to the law, to lead armies, to defend the people against those who would attack them. So a king had power, certainly, but the king was supposed to be subject to the law. That's why in Deuteronomy 17, whenever God gave to Moses the conditions for a king, the conditions a king would have to follow whenever he would be appointed in the land, Deuteronomy 17 verse 14 onwards, the very first thing the king was supposed to do was to write for himself a copy of the law, to write out a book that was a copy of the law. And he was to read it. Verse 19 of Deuteronomy 17 says, to read it all the days of his life, to keep the statutes of God, and that would keep him humble so that he wouldn't lift up his heart above his brothers, verse 20, or turn aside from the law. So the vision here is of a humble king who knows that he himself is a servant of God. He is subject to the law of God. He's not proud and arrogant and lifting himself up above others. Now that's really what David is saying here in 1 Kings 2 that Solomon should do. And he says that this is important because God has promised that if David's sons follow God's ways, with all their heart and soul, then there would be no lack. There would never be a gap in the line of descendants of David on the throne of Israel. But let's read on then to hear what else David says. 2 Kings chapter 2 verse 5. Sorry, 1 Kings chapter 2 verse 5. Moreover, you also know what Joab the son of Zeruiah did to me, how he dealt with the two commanders of the armies of Israel, Abner the son of Ner, and Amasa the son of Jether, whom he killed, avenging in time of peace for blood that had been shed in war, and putting the blood of war on the belt around his waist, and on the sandals on his feet. Act therefore according to your wisdom, but do not let his grey head go down to Sheol in peace. But deal loyally with the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table, for with such loyalty they met me when I fled from Absalom your brother. And there is also with you Shimei the son of Gera the Benjamite from Bahurim, who cursed me with a grievous curse on the day when I went to Mahanaim. But when he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now, therefore, do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man. You will know what you ought to do to him, and you shall bring his grey head down with blood to Sheol. Then David slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. And the time that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. He reigned for 7 years in Hebron and for 33 years in Jerusalem. So Solomon sat on the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was firmly established. I will pause again there after verse 12. The first parting words of David to his son Solomon were so full of wisdom and grace, weren't they? Telling him to be obedient to the law of God. And then David continues to tell him how to act towards people who had had significant parts in David's own story. Joab, and then the sons of Barzillai, and then Shimei. Now, what are we to make of these words of David? Why does he give these instructions or this advice to Solomon? Well, as I've said, verses 1 to 4 really show a noble quality in David, an awareness of what a king ought to be. But sadly, some of what he says in verses 5 onwards really sound vindictive, vengeful, even dishonest. Joab is the son of Zeruiah. Zeruiah was a sister of David. I think I wrongly said in a previous episode, the last episode, that it was Zeruiah was a brother of David, but she was his sister. And Joab was her son, David's nephew. Joab, as David mentions here, has killed two commanders of the army of Israel, Abner, the son of Ner. Abner, who was the commander of Saul's army, and who then became a commander of David's army. Well, Abner killed him, or Joab killed him, rather. And Joab also killed Amasa. Amasa was the leader of Absalom's army when Absalom, the son of David, rebelled against his father. And then David brought him in as commander of his own army, replacing Joab with him. And Joab had Amasa killed as well. Now, David had not dealt with Joab. It seems, in fact, that Joab was a bit too big for his boots, too difficult for David to discipline and to control. It's probably a weakness of David that he hadn't taken action against Joab, but now he tells Solomon to take that action, and it reads as a weak king. Certainly in his later years we saw that at the very beginning of 1 Kings that David was weak, but now telling his son to do what he had failed to do and to take action against Joab, there is this description that in times of peace he avenged for blood shed in war. He put the blood of war on the belt around his waist and on the sandals on his feet. And so Solomon must act wisely, but not let Joab's grey head go down to Sheol in peace. Now we can see how this might be a calculated move to try and help Solomon to have stability as a king. If David had struggled to control Joab, then maybe Solomon would fail altogether to control his cousin. Joab might even think of taking over the throne himself from Solomon, or may cause other problems for this new king. But it doesn't really speak very well of David, does it, that he's asking his son to take revenge for things done so long ago, in the first instance some 33 years earlier. And then there is loyalty to be shown to the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite. Now, again, this was a man who had acted with nobility and loyalty towards David himself when he fled from Absalom. And perhaps the sense here is that ever since the rebellion of Absalom and death of Absalom, David has been a broken man. He hadn't taken action against Joab. Perhaps he feels he hadn't adequately repaid this family of Barzillai. Or perhaps, again, he's thinking that this will help to maintain unity in the kingdom. Gilead, of course, is on the opposite side of the Jordan, in the far north of the kingdom. David's capital, Jerusalem, is towards the south. Judah is in the south. And this is someone from the tribes that later would become the kingdom of Israel. And of course, that division, although David ruled over both parts, that division was very real. We read it referred to as Israel and Judah, don't we, in this passage that David talks about those two, or it's talked about, and he reigned over all Israel for 40 years, but 7 years in Hebron. It was 7 years that it took for David to establish his rule over the whole of the 12 tribes. So maybe this is a move to try and maintain unity. And then thirdly, Shimei, the son of Gera. And this too goes back to the time of Solomon. This is the man who mocked David, who cursed him with a grievous curse. And David at the time had seemed to forgive him. David does this a number of times in Samuel and in 2 Samuel. He is often a peacemaking figure. He's prepared to let God take revenge. He won't strike out against Saul. He recognizes Saul as God's anointed, and he waits for Saul to die before he can become king. And on other occasions, he's ready to forgive people, to pardon or to overlook the wrongs that they have done. Of course, at times that was to an unhelpful degree, particularly with his son Adonijah and probably Absalom as well, the lack of disciplining them. But one of those actions was the oath that David made to Shimei, saying that he would not put him to death with the sword. But now David tells Solomon to put him to death, not to hold him guiltless. It's really quite sad. It seems like David has been bearing a grudge against this man for many years. I suppose it's possible that David also thinks that Shimei might be a cause of rebellion. Shimei's from the tribe of Benjamin, and maybe David is concerned that the Benjamites, as they had at a much earlier stage in the time of the judges, might be involved in a civil war, might turn against him. But it does seem much more personal than that, doesn't it? David had not forgotten, had never really forgiven the curse of Shimei. And so Solomon is to take the revenge that David didn't take. It's not that David breaks his oath. Strictly speaking, he's not breaking the word of the oath, but he's certainly going against its spirit. And I think, therefore, these words are in many ways a contrast to verses 1 to 4. 1 to 4 showing a king who was subject to the law of God, and verses 5 to 9 showing a very human king who was very much subject to his own sense of pride and desire for vengeance and the political machinations of those in power. And so we're reminded that although David is a great king, verses 1 to 4 remind us, he is not the ultimate king. Verses 5 to 9 show us that he too is a sinner, just like us, a man whose heart was complex and full of good but also of bad. But David dies and Solomon is established on the throne. Well, let's read on then, 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 13. Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. And she said, "Do you come peacefully?" He said, "Peacefully." Then he said, "I've something to say to you." She said, "Speak." He said, "You know that the kingdom was mine and that all Israel fully expected me to reign. However, the kingdom has turned about and become my brother's, for it was his from the Lord. And now I have one request to make of you. Do not refuse me." She said to him, "Speak." And he said, "Please ask King Solomon, he will not refuse you, to give me Abishag the Shunammite as my wife." Bathsheba said, "Very well, I will speak for you to the king." So Bathsheba went to King Solomon to speak to him on behalf of Adonijah, and the king rose to meet her and bowed down to her. Then he sat on his throne and had a seat brought for the king's mother, and she sat on his right. Then she said, "I have one small request to make of you. Do not refuse me." And the king said to her, "Make your request, my mother, for I will not refuse you." She said, "Let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, as his wife." King Solomon answered his mother, "And why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also, for he is my older brother, and on his side are Abiathar the priest and Joab the son of Zeruiah." Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, "God, do so to me and more also, if this word does not cost Adonijah his life. Now therefore, as the Lord lives, who has established me and placed me on the throne of David my father, and who has made me a house as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death today." So King Solomon sent Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and he struck him down, and he died. And to Abiathar the priest the king said, "Go to Anathoth, to your estate, for you deserve death. But I will not at this time put you to death, because you carried the ark of the Lord God before David my father, and because you shared in all my father's affliction." So Solomon expelled Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, thus fulfilling the word of the Lord that he had spoken concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. When the news came to Joab, for Joab had supported Adonijah, although he had not supported Absalom, Joab fled to the tent of the Lord and caught hold of the horns of the altar. And when it was told King Solomon, "Joab has fled to the tent of the Lord, and behold, he is beside the altar," Solomon sent Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, saying, "Go, strike him down." So Benaiah came to the tent of the Lord and said to him, "The king commands, come out." But he said, "No, I will die here." Then Benaiah brought the king word again, saying, "Thus said Joab, and thus he answered me." The king replied to him, "Do as he has said, strike him down and bury him, and thus take away from me and from my father's house the guilt for the blood that Joab shed without cause. The king, or the Lord, will bring back his bloody deeds on his own head, because without the knowledge of my father David he attacked and killed with the sword two men more righteous and better than himself, Abner the son of Ner, commander of the army of Israel, and Amasa the son of Jether, commander of the army of Judah. So shall their blood come back on the head of Joab and on the head of his descendants forever. But for David and for his descendants and for his house and for his throne, there shall be peace from the Lord for evermore." Then Benaiah the son of Jehoiada went up and struck him down and put him to death, and he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. The king put Benaiah the son of Jehoiada over the army in place of Joab, and the king put Zadok the priest in the place of Abiathar. Then the king sent and summoned Shimei, and said to him, "Build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and do not go out from there to any place whatever. For on the day you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain that you shall die. Your blood shall be on your own head." And Shimei said to the king, "What you say is good. As my lord the king has said, so will your servant do. So Shimei lived in Jerusalem for many days. But it happened at the end of 3 years that two of Shimei's servants ran away to Achish, son of Maacah, king of Gath. And when it was told Shimei, behold, your servants are in Gath, Shimei arose and saddled a donkey and went to Gath to Achish to seek his servants. Shimei went and brought his servants from Gath. And when Solomon was told that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and returned, the king sent and summoned Shimei and said to him, did I not make you swear by the Lord and solemnly warn you, saying, know for certain that on the day you go out and go to any place, where whatever, you shall die. And you said to me, what you say is good, I will obey. Why then have you not kept your oath to the Lord and the commandment with which I commanded you? The king also said to Shimei, you know in your own heart all the harm that you did to David my father, so the Lord will bring back your harm on your own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever. Then the king commanded Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and struck him down, and he died. So the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Finishing our reading there at the end of 1 Kings chapter 2. Now we've already seen that David had told Solomon that he should do away with Shimei and with Joab. And in this passage we read not only of Joab and Shimei being put to death, but also Adonijah, which of course David had not told Solomon to do. Now we could read this as necessary actions of Solomon to establish the kingdom. It's strange, isn't it? We've already read in verse 12 that Solomon sat on the throne of David his father and his kingdom was firmly established. And then at the end of the chapter we read that so was the kingdom firmly established. Were these deaths really necessary for Solomon to establish his kingdom? Or were they just the petty, vengeful acts of someone who had not forgiven? Well, let's look at them one by one. Adonijah, the son of Haggith, who, as we've seen already in 1 Kings, tried to make himself king when David was still alive, but who was not successful. Well, it seems like a bit of a different Adonijah who comes to Bathsheba. Interesting, he doesn't come to Solomon. Presumably he feels he wouldn't be welcome, wouldn't be received by his younger brother. So he comes to the queen mother, Bathsheba, or the king mother, rather, the mother of the king, Bathsheba. And she asks, does he come peacefully? He says that he does. And his request seems quite reasonable. He acknowledges that the king had been his, the people had expected him to reign. But he says that the turnaround from that was from the Lord, that the kingdom was Solomon's from the Lord, verse 15, from Yahweh. When I spoke about the rebellion of Adonijah, I said that Adonijah never names God, doesn't refer to God. It was David and the others who were with him who referred to the Lord. But now Adonijah is referring to the Lord, and he's acknowledging that the Lord is the one who has established Solomon as king. And his request seems quite simple. In fact, he calls his brother Solomon King Solomon. He wants Abishag the Shunammite as his wife. Now, we've no reason from the way it's told to think that that's for any other reason other than that he was attracted to her. She was an attractive young woman. But that's not how Solomon reads it. He reads this as a rebellious act. When his mother tells him about the request, and she does it with humility, verses 19 to 20 describe that, or to 21. But Solomon says, well, if you're asking for Abishag the Shunammite, and remember this is the woman who had been brought to David at the very beginning of 1 Kings in his old age to keep him warm in bed, who he never knew, he never had intercourse with her. But she may have been a wife, a concubine potentially, but certainly that if they were married, it was not consummated. Solomon takes this as an example of of Adonijah trying to establish himself again as a potential king. It's almost as if he had gone and taken David's wives to be his wives. That would have been a thing that you might do if you wanted to make yourself king. But it's not. At least it doesn't seem to be what Adonijah has in mind. And she isn't actually a queen. She isn't really a wife of David in the true sense of the word. But Solomon takes great offence and says, he's my older brother, and Abiathar and Joab are with him. It almost seems as if Solomon is paranoid. And he swears before God and says that Adonijah will die for this. And so he sends Benaiah, and Benaiah kills him, the first of three people that Benaiah kills for Solomon in this chapter. Was Solomon acting wisely, justly here? Maybe Adonijah is a threat to him. Maybe Adonijah was indeed, by wanting to take Abishag, trying to position himself as a significant or powerful person. But it still seems quite petty for Solomon, doesn't it? And so there are two different ways to read this. That perhaps Solomon was wrong in killing his brother. Perhaps Solomon was doing what was necessary, but it doesn't sound very pleasant. And even Solomon's relationship with his mother, he seems to be a little bit high and mighty. Now, the second person that Benaiah is going to kill is Joab. Before that, we have the mention of Abiathar, who had also gone with Adonijah, but Abiathar is allowed to retire to Anathoth, the priestly town, to his estate. He's not going to be put to death because of his service for God under King David, but it does remove the last remaining priest from the line of Eli, fulfills that prophecy from 1 Samuel. Joab realizes that he's going to be next, and he tries to take refuge at the altar in the tabernacle, but Solomon does not allow him to escape, and so Benaiah is sent again. And even though he comes back and asks Solomon, is it really right to kill him? Well, yes, Joab is going to be killed as well. Is this right for Solomon to act in this way? It's very clear that Solomon is the one who is commanding this directly. And there does seem to be an irony, doesn't there, in verse 31? Because what David had said to Solomon that Joab had done wrong was to take revenge in peacetime for things done in war. But what Solomon is doing here is exactly that same thing. And in verse 31, Solomon says, strike him down and bury him, and take away from me and my father's house the guilt for the blood that Joab shed. But how can you do away with one set of guilt by doing something else that is bloody? Surely two wrongs don't make a right. And tragically, Joab, as Adonijah had, is clinging to the horns of the altar. Now, there is a provision in Exodus chapter 21, verse 14, that the person who is clinging to the altar, if they have unintentionally killed someone, can find sanctuary there. But sanctuary is not provided if someone has deliberately murdered another person. And so it's not wrong for Solomon to say that, or to overturn the sanctuary. In fact, by doing it, Solomon is explicitly saying that Joab is guilty of murder of innocent blood. But it does seem that Solomon is really turning pretty nasty, and it's hard to see this as the right way for him to act as a godly king subject to the law of God. And so then Benaiah and Zadok, who had been loyal to Solomon, are confirmed as the high priest in Zadok's case, as the commander of the army in Benaiah's case. And lastly then we have Shimei. Is Shimei a threat? Well, certainly David had told Solomon to get rid of him. So Solomon puts very strict conditions of curfew, of restriction upon him. And for some time, Shimei keeps that. And whether he grew overly confident or whether he just thought that this trip to recover to runaway servants would be allowed by the king. Shimei goes to Gath to retrieve his servants who have run away, and when he returns, Solomon takes ruthless revenge, exacts what he had said would happen if Shimei left Jerusalem. Was this the right thing? It's also notable, by the way, that Solomon says that if you cross the Kidron Valley, which would have been the journey towards the east of the city, whereas Gath, where he goes, is to the west. Maybe Shimei thought that it was only to the east that he was not allowed to travel, or that Solomon wouldn't have the same problem if he went west. Well, whatever the reason, Solomon does take vengeance upon him, even though Shimei doesn't seem to be doing anything as a deliberate rebellion against Solomon. What are we to make of this? Well, I think it's very difficult to interpret, isn't it? We're not told explicitly what God thought of all of this. But I think we are seeing here the realities of kingship, the realities of politics, the realities of power, and of the corruptions of power, and of the exclusion of rivals, and of justice and injustice at the hands of the powerful. It's interesting that David, in his closing words to Solomon, described Solomon as wise. But this seems to be the wisdom of Solomon. It's a calculating, very earthly, human wisdom, certainly at this point. But the kingdom is established in his hand, and so Solomon will be the one who has now taken the kingship in place of his father, David.